close call with death. Have you had one? I have. I've had a lot of them, but who's counting? In this session, we'll talk about the events of those of us that have come dangerously close to death and had the great luck or destiny to elude death and carry on. Enjoy the show. I am with Casey McAllister, and Casey is calling in tonight from Oregon. Where out in Oregon do you live?
The Salem area, about an hour south of Portland.
Okay, great. And we're connecting tonight because I saw your story and have been extremely impressed with your story. It just moved me, actually, when I saw it on TV, and I just saw what you had accomplished. But we're going to talk tonight about where you came from, what led up to where you're at today, because it just didn't happen overnight. But I'm interviewing on A Close Call with Death with Casey McAllister. And Casey is the founder of Rise Up with Casey. And I'm going to read something that is out on social media. And this is from Casey. He says, "If there's anything that I am truly great at, it is hard work. I lost my legs as a kid, but that has never stopped me from giving up on life. In fact, when people tried to tell me what I couldn't achieve, I made it a point to prove them wrong. I found out through life that not only could I do some amazing things, but I could help others as well. I'm an athlete. I'm a husband. I am a father of five, and I am a Spartan!" Exclamation mark. It really touched me when I saw your Spartan competition. Where you participated, you have no legs from the hips down, and you did the entire Spartan beast, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did the entire beast.
Yes. And I've done that race, and I swear to this day, it's probably the most likely the hardest competition I've ever done in my life. I really came out of that wanting a chocolate milkshake and a bed. So it's super, super hard, and you completed that. Let's go back, and I would love to know about you, Casey, to tell the listeners who you are, where you live, and a little bit about you and your family.
Yeah, well, I'm Casey McAllister. I live here in Oregon. I was actually born in Wyoming, where I lived till I was 8 years old, but then my dad got an opportunity to run a tire shop, so he moved here to Oregon, and that's kind of, you know, my dad began to teach me what hard work was really about. You know, never gave me an excuse, never let me, you know, I lost my legs when I was six, but it was never an excuse for me of what I could and couldn't do. My dad always said this stupid thing, which I, you know, as a kid, I thought was stupid. Now it's, you know, of course, brilliant. He would always say, "Can't never did anything and won't never will." And so I grew up from a very early age knowing that it wasn't impossible. You just had to figure out a different way to do it.
A mindset.
It is. I mean, it is a mindset. And I didn't realize how powerful a mindset my parents were able to instill in me until I much later in life. But yeah, I'm a father. I got five kids. One's going into high school, two in middle school, two in elementary, so all across the board. I'm running my own speaking business. And not only that, but I'm still a Spartan athlete. Honestly, the hardest events in the world. I mean, you can find harder events, but for the common person to do Spartan races have got to be the hardest thing, you know, an average Joe is ever going to do in their lifetime.
I agree. And for those who don't know what a Spartan competition is, there's three different kinds. There's a sprint, and it's just a few, I think it's 7 miles.
The sprint is 3 miles.
3 miles. And then there's what's the next one? Is it
the super?
Yeah, the super. And then there's the beast. The beast, how many miles is that?
13.
Yeah, 13 miles.
Yeah, it's basically a half marathon, but it's not only a half marathon. You got military style obstacle course, as well as you're not just running on a road. It is up and down the craziest trails, ski and slopes. Obstacles. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty intense.
it's very intense. I mean, you even, you know, you have to throw spears. You have to roll and pick up big rocks. You have to pick up buckets of rock and carry them. You have to just do all these strenuous, crazy things, even climbing up and over obstacles in the mud. You have to go in the muddy water. It is brutal. It usually takes hours to complete, correct?
Oh yeah. The shortest one took me around 9 and some hours. The longest one of the beast, I was out there for more than 12 hours.
Yeah, we're talking about the Spartan race, and we're going to come back around to that here in just a little bit. I want to back up just a for a moment. You know, you mentioned you were from Wyoming. Where at in Wyoming?
A small little town, well, like everything in Wyoming, called Kemmer.
Kemmer, Wyoming.
Yeah, it's about an hour from Evanston, so.
Okay, great. I'm from Wyoming. I grew up in Wyoming. Okay. So I know there's a lot of tiny little towns there, and it creates a lot of real work ethic coming from that community. And I admire your parents for really helping you develop such a great work ethic and not giving up on things. So tell me how, when you mentioned that you lost your legs, Casey, tell me how that happened.
So when I was 6 years old, we were living in Kemmer, Wyoming at the time, but I had an uncle that was going off on a mission trip. So we went down, you know, to say farewells to him. Well, and this was down Roosevelt, Utah, so even smaller than Kemmer. And we were just standing around out after church was over on the sidewalk next to this divided highway. And my mom and dad were standing right there next to me. And either my mom or my dad said, okay, Casey, there's two cars coming and a truck. Well, you know, as a little 6 year old, I stood there and waited as the two cars went by. But as soon as that second car passed, for whatever reason, I sprinted out into the road. Now, I didn't realize until much later in life that the highway, it's not that far across. The divided highway, I think I looked it up, is only like 24 feet across. And so it's not that far. It's not that big. For a little six-year-old, I can totally imagine, hey, it's right over there. It'll take me 2 seconds to run across.
And you were in such a hurry to get over there.
Yeah, man, my brother, my cousins, you know, the aunts and uncles, you know, lunch after church, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you had to get there.
I had to get over there. Mm-hmm. And so I sprinted right in front of this truck, but it wasn't just, it was a semi-truck that I ran in front of. And I guess at the last second, I even dove, not that I remember it, but at the last second, I dove to get out of the way. But it wasn't far enough, and the truck sucked me under the wheels, where my little six-year-old body decided to see if it could handle a semi-truck. When the truck stopped, and, you know, of course, my dad ran pretty much right after me, but, you know, there was only, he couldn't catch me. And when the truck stopped and I was laying there, my left leg was completely amputated, and my right leg was hanging by just a little piece of flesh. And it was pretty battered. From there, you know, they called the ambulance right away and got me to the hospital, but, it was pretty rough. In fact, they said my blood pressure hit zero plenty of times. They had to, you know, keep me alive through brute force for, you know, the transport to the Salt Lake City hospital. And so they pretty quick got me on a plane, flew me to Salt Lake.
Did you go to Primary Children's Hospital then?
Yeah, the Primary Children's Hospital there in Salt Lake. And I didn't realize this until I talked with some of the nurses that actually work on the life flight. And, cause they flew me in a jet to the Salt Lake Airport. And usually from there, you get in the ambulance, you go to the hospital, but they picked me up in a helicopter and took me to the hospital. And I, you know, for years, I thought that was just what they did, but that's when you know, seconds mean everything. And so they flew me to the hospital and proceeded to, you know, go through the work of saving my life at that point.
And there was just no way that they could save your limbs, right? They weren't trying to reattach your legs or anything. They were gone. They were just trying to save your life and close off everything and at least save your body, right?
Yeah, well, the left leg had been totally ripped off. They later found it wedged up in between two of the wheels of the semi-truck. Oh. The right leg was pretty well trashed. Now, the doctor did come out and tell my parents, you know, they said, we can... which was pretty amazing at the time. This was 1992. They really didn't have good, they had good equipment for children, but yeah. Good enough to keep me alive, not good enough, you know, what they can do now. And the doctor said, we can try to save that right leg, but he may never walk on it. It may require hundreds of surgeries, and it may end up killing him just because of how traumatized that leg was. And my mom looked at the doctor and said, he can live without legs. Take the leg off.
Isn't that something?
It was pretty amazing.
That your mom had that attitude. I mean, both your parents must have been just absolutely traumatized by that accident. Seeing that happen to you, that must have just broke their hearts to see that. And most likely thought that, you know, you were dead there for a while.
Well, in fact, my mom... happened. Yeah, my mom, one of the coolest parts of the whole story, my mom was prepared, you know, if you believe in God, which I am, you know, I believe, you know, God prepared her. She knew something was going to happen. She thought, you know, my dad was going to die, and then she knew one of her kids was going to die. And when I ran across that road, she knew in her heart that that was it. And she knew I was dead. That was in her mind. I was gone. That happened. And she had already been at peace with that because she had been prepared. And so when I was alive, when I got to live, she was thankful and just grateful that I was still around and that I would still be there.
Casey, what was that like for you as a 6-year-old to recover from an incident like that? What was on your mind when you woke up? Here you are, just a fast running little active kid at 6 years old that just wants to run and play and hang out with his friends and do all these cool things. What was it like for you to wake up and realize your legs are gone?
You know, I don't know how much, you know, I was prepared, but I remember waking up and looking back and hearing from my mom, this never happened. But when I woke up, I remember sitting up in bed and having my blanket on my shoulder because I needed to go to the bathroom. And so I was going, but I couldn't get off the bed. And I was so confused. And a lady comes in and says, Casey, you don't have legs anymore. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense why I can't get off the bed. Right. And
no, but reality,
it was similar. I woke up and kind of reached down to where my legs should have been. And my mom, who was right next to me, said, Casey, your legs are gone. You don't have the legs anymore. And I guess I kind of nodded like, oh, okay. And then I, you know, laid back down. And that was kind of the biggest realization, you know, the biggest, oh no, I don't have legs moment. No, I mean, there was recovery. Honestly, the part I hated the worst was my dang prosthetics. I hated wearing those things. I was, you know, more than happy to hop in my wheelchair and buzz around the entire hospital, terrorizing the nurses. you know, I was more than happy to hop off my wheelchair and go do all the physical, you know, occupational, whatever therapy out of my wheelchair. It was just when I had to wear those stupid prosthetic legs that I hated the recovery process.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, many of us have seen Soul Surfer, the story of Bethany Hamilton losing her arm in that deadly shark attack. And when the doctors tried to hook her up with a prosthetic arm to help her get back to normal, so to speak, and get back into life, she hated that thing, did not like it at all, got rid of it, threw it down, and just thought, you know, I'll get along without it. She just blossomed in without that arm and has ever since. So you're very much alike in that way. And people that I've talked to, other people that have lost limbs, the prosthetics, unless they really adapt well to them, they oftentimes just get in the way. And it sounds like with you, they did.
Yeah, no, well, you know, and my mom, which looking back on it, as a kid, I hated them. My mom made me wear them all the way through high school. I hated them, hated them, hated them. But as I look back on that experience, my mom had a vision. She wanted me to have the opportunity to be able to walk, to use prosthetic legs and to walk. And I ended up, you know, I hit college. I wore them maybe once or twice in college, and that was it. You know, I was done with them. But I was able to do something that I hated every single day, which honestly, in this generation, that sounds so stupid. Why make a kid do something they hate? But it really taught me work ethic. You know, it taught me to be able to do something horrible every single day. And because of that, I'm tougher mentally than millions of other people, because I had to do something that absolutely sucked every single day my entire childhood.
So that's another thing I think of often with your story, is that, you know, in reality, you have to deal with something really, really tough every single day, but you look so happy and you look like, you know, you're still enjoying life despite the challenges that you have. And, I'm one of our stories that we've heard from Jason Van Camp that, you know, you can become comfortable being uncomfortable. You can work in it. You can just survive and work in a world where odd things can hit you every day, but you get used to that and you can still find happiness and success in the challenging world around you. It sounds like that's what you found. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I found the joy of doing hard things. I found the incredible power of doing the impossible at a very early age. And, you know, I'd have to kind of think about it to pin it down. But I remember when we moved to Oregon, they wouldn't let me play basketball. And me and my mom fought that until I started playing basketball. I got into wrestling very early and immediately fell in love with it, because if anybody familiar with wrestling know that it is the hardest sport you can absolutely do. In fact, the founder of Spartan Race, Joe DeSena, he often talks about wrestling. He gets his boys are in wrestling. He knows the challenge that is put towards. And so from a very early age, I saw every challenge I possibly could. It doesn't matter what it was, whether it was a scout camp, I was out there doing the mile swim. If it was in school, I would do absolutely the hardest challenge ever presented to see, you know, what I was capable of and what I was going to be able to accomplish. And, I ended up in the state championship match in wrestling. I ended up going to state in the track events I did, even though I was in a wheelchair. I did cross country in a wheelchair, which looking back on that is insane. Like doing cross country, going off road, going in the grass and the mud and the bark dust in a wheelchair, trying to do it at speed, and not only trying, but actually, you know, doing remarkably well. To me, that's absolutely insane. It's incredible.
So, Casey, what drives you? What drives you in all these directions and makes you really want to challenge yourself in all these different areas around you? What is that?
I have a goal. You know, I have this far-seeing purpose. And when I look in the future, I'm not where I am right now. I mean, I see so many people that are just, you know, they're comfortable sitting and, you know, do whatever job they're doing right now is the job they're fine with. And I've never been that way. I want to be faster. I want to be stronger. I want to, you know, and it's not really money for me. I mean, money is nice. It keeps my family, you know, comfortable. But for me, it's success is how many people can I motivate and influence and inspire? You know, success for me, I just started doing jiu-jitsu. You know, success for me is being able to start, you know, winning tournaments. Not that that's, you know, where it's at, but it shows, you know, what I can do. And so that my goals are always ahead of me. I don't know if I'll ever get everything done on my bucket list, because it just keeps growing. My bucket list just gets bigger every single day.
You know, just thinking about the continual challenge that you have,
I think it's so cool that you're just not running out of ideas. You know, there's always just more and more and more, because that's life. That's a great way to look at it. And I'm just thinking, for those that are listening to this, what would you tell young people around the world that are having challenges in their life? You know, maybe they've become ill, or they've lost a limb, or they're having some kind of challenge where it's just downright sad and depressing. And in today's world lately, we've seen so many cases of anxiety and depression, and kids wanting to take their own lives and just be done with this life. What would you say to those people that just have these challenges, and what kind of hope can you give them?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this, especially as we're, you know, whether it's we're coming out of COVID, or whether it's, you know, now we're just more aware of each other and people. But yeah, people, we're starting to see a lot more anxiety, a lot more depression, a lot more of that I give up kind of attitude. And I, you know, especially what I do for, you know, work, I'm a motivator, you know, so I'm constantly thinking, okay, what are the problems and how can we fix them? And I think one of the biggest problems is the ease at which we slip into our phones, you know, social media, games, just the dead time of doing absolutely nothing. I mean, we're not good about doing nothing. We can do it. We can do nothing all day long, but we're not good about it. It's when we progress and when we're doing something. And honestly, my first suggestion when people are like, what do I do, is run. Every day, go for a run, because that is the simplest, easiest thing that will make you successful every day. That little bit of progress every day is going to help. And after that, you need to start seeing what lights your fire, what makes you happy, what gets you out of bed in the morning. If you haven't found that yet, you need to find it, because once you find what gets you out of the bed in the morning, you're going to have purpose. And you might be scared. I'm scared almost every single day. When I get out of bed, I want to have a purpose and I want to be able to move forward.
I love that attitude. And you know what, life isn't always just a bowl of cherries. It's not always just super fun and exciting and you win all the time. Nobody wins all the time. Oftentimes, people will have a setback. People will lose. You'll get in a competition. You won't win it. You may not even place. You will come in sometimes last, but at least you were there. At least you were putting one foot in front of another. You were giving it your best. I want to ask you something. I've been thinking about this ever since I saw you on TV. At the end of the Spartan race, there is the big, long line of fire. There's a whole pile of wood. It's on fire. There's red hot coals there. And every Spartan is supposed to jump over the fire at the end as a token of completion of just a heck of a competition. And it's actually like you've gone through hell at the end because of the fire and everything and the brimstone there. How in the world, Casey, did you get across that wall of fire with your arms?
I want to say that the first time was the hardest time, but every time I approach that wall of fire, it really is a wall of heat that hits you in the face. You know, talking about facing your fears, that was a big fear. You know, how am I going to get over this fire? But I knew that I knew I had to do it. I knew that there was no other way, because I could go around, but I wasn't going to go around. I had made the decision to go through that fire and I was going to get it done. Honestly, I get through as fast as I can. I make myself, there's a boot that I wear that's pretty durable. And I wear some gloves. So I try to put my hands on the least, burnt spot and go as fast as I can through those coals.
Casey, do you have any hair on your arms? Has it all burned off? from going through the fire with just your gloves on?
I think it gets a little singed.
That's amazing to me. And I encourage anyone that wants to see that, you're out on social media, on Instagram and different social media avenues and streaming on YouTube. All they have to do is look up Casey McAllister, Casey spelled with a K-A-C-E-Y, McAllister. And you'll see this race and how Casey does the Spartan race. It is absolutely mind-blowing and honorable. And my heart goes out to you. I just think you're just such a motivator by the not only the things that you say, but the way that you live, the things that you do. They're just mind-blowingly cool. I was just wondering, let's talk a little bit about your family. When growing up, did you, you know, and you were starting to think about dating and someday being married, having a wife, what went through your mind with a kid with no legs thinking about marriage? Talk about that.
You know, and this question has come up quite a few times. I didn't realize, you know, I was an awkward kid. I mean, I was an athlete for sure, but I definitely wasn't the star quarterback, you know, type persona. I was the awkward, you know, wrestler, get it done kind of athlete. I was a bookworm. I was in play. So I was fairly socially awkward through most of my growing up. I dated a little bit, you know, mostly just friends that I had. You know, we went out to dances and, you know, we'd go out to dinner every once in a while, but I really wasn't, you know, I didn't think a lot about it until after, you know, when I got about 20 years old, where I started kind of looking around. Honestly, the not having legs and being in a wheelchair, it never really was an issue for me. And honestly, I'll have to ask my wife if she ever, you know, thought two things of it. But for me, it was never something I looked at, because all of my life was never about the wheelchair. It was about the challenge, but it wasn't about not having legs. Sure. It was about how to do things rather than, you know, why can't I do it? In fact, when I wrote my book, I called a lot of my friends up, and this one time I was talking to my friend who was one of my wrestling buddies. And I said, Greg, you know, why or how was it growing up with, you know, a guy without legs? And his response was, I don't know, you were just Casey, you know. And so in my mind and in my friend's mind and in probably my wife's mind, it's never been about not having legs. It's never been about the wheelchair. It's always just who I am. And I think so often the, you know, quote unquote disabled community gets hung up on their disability. You know, they get hung up on, oh, no one's going to want to date me because I'm blind. No one's going to want to date me because, you know, I don't have, you know, three fingers or whatever it is. There's so many things that we, instead of identifying what we can do and identifying who we are, the disabled community, and in fact, in community in general, we identify by our faults rather than, you know, our successes. But for me, it was never about, you know, worrying about the girl, you know, and whether she thought I was good enough in or out of a wheelchair. You know, it was always, am I too socially awkward to ever, you know, talk to a girl?
I love that. So your legs do not define you.
Yeah, no. In fact, in high school, I didn't even want to be known as the legless guy. I wanted to be known as the state championship wrestler. I wanted to be known as, you know, the one of the best athletes in the entire, you know, state of Oregon. That's what I wanted to be known for. Yeah, I mean, people saw me because I didn't have legs. People noticed me because I didn't have legs, but I wanted to transcend that. I wanted to be beyond the not having legs. I wanted to just be seen as an incredible athlete.
And that, my friend, is what you are. You're just inspiring people all over the world by the athletic ability and talent that you have and the things that you're accomplishing. You're absolutely showing everyone that things can be done. Nothing's impossible. And if you run into a roadblock, you know, you just find another way around it and find something else you can do that gets you out of being stopped. So I admire, you know, what you're accomplishing and what you're doing big time. How long does it take you usually to master or to get good at some things that you set out to try and do?
That's a really good question. In fact, when I wrote my book, I kind of thought about that for a second, because writing has always been one of my worst traits. I struggle. I was a voracious reader. I read absolutely all the time, but when it came to writing, I froze up. I could barely get the words on the paper. Even a one-page paper absolutely destroyed me. And so when I knew I needed to write my own book. I knew I needed to be the one. I didn't want somebody else to write this book for me. I knew I had to be the one to write it. And so as the first day that I started typing, it took me, 6 hours of typing that day or something. My wife comes out and she's like, "Well, let me see what you got." And I had a paragraph. I had a paragraph written after 6 hours.
You definitely were in writer's cramp.
She couldn't even read it though. Like, it was unintelligible. It was awful. And so that's where I started. But after 2 to 3 years of writing that single book, it's actually a really, really good book. Well written. Every time I read it, I'm like, holy cow, I wrote this. This is incredible.
I want to give you a little plug about that, but tell me what it's called. And it's by Casey McAllister. What's the name of the book?
It's called Rise Up. When Life Gets You Down, Rise Up.
Okay. And they can get that on both soft copy as well as hard, out on Amazon or wherever.
Yeah, Amazon, my website, riseupwithcasey.com. You can get it through me so I can sign it. You can get it through Amazon. There's probably a couple other places too.
I applaud you for the accomplishments that you're doing. Never seen a guy do so many pull-ups and amazing things that you do. So do you ever really get ticked off? I know that it's an emotional up and down roller coaster, and definitely with kids, you can get sad and everything. Do you get just mad, and how do you get over that anger?
I really am a pretty chill kind of guy. Family is definitely, when kids are fighting or when they, we had a kid bite another kid this morning, times like that, you have to realize where that anger's coming from, and it's coming from a place of frustration. Honestly, that's where most of my anger comes is when I'm frustrated, and I can't do anything about it. So instead of letting that anger build, and, I try to move forward. I try to figure out,
on this podcast series, the whole thing is about a close call with death, where people have a situation happen where they could nearly die and leave this earth and go back to God. And in miracle situations like yours, you're spared and you have an opportunity to spend the rest of your life with the cards you've been dealt. How has it, just reflecting back, I imagine you thought, wow, I was super lucky when you were six, but you're also just a kid and you don't realize the gravity of the whole situation until you get a little bit older. When you think about how lucky you were, how fortunate and blessed you were to stay alive and have this life to live, talk to us about what goes through Casey McAllister's mind when you think about this life, how valuable it is, and would you do it all again? Would you change anything?
I don't know that for a long time I realized how lucky I was and how, my parents coming at it from a religious standpoint, I always knew that, I was saved for a reason, basically, because looking at it from a medical standpoint, from a science standpoint, I've heard it had people try to science it rather than just miracle it. It is a very, very difficult to come at it from a science point of view, because a little six-year-old does not survive, getting ran over by a semi. It just doesn't happen. And, I believe I'm on this earth for a reason. And every time I consider, what I had to go through to be here, it really motivates me and tells me that there is a lot more to this life, not just for me, but for everyone out there. And I try to live my life in a way to help others realize how amazing life is. It can be hard. Often it's hard. It almost daily can be challenging, but it really is an incredible life to have.
For sure. I agree with that 100%. And with that life, a couple of things. Who's your biggest support? You know, who's been there for you to give you the support that you've needed to keep going?
Definitely from day one, it's been my parents. You know, they my mom, it's a small little thing, but almost every year my mom drops off a big old bag of shorts, which sounds
funny. I bet you go through a lot of them.
I go through a lot of shorts. And so my mom, you know, that was one of the things early on. She's like, I don't care how many shorts I need to buy for this kid. I'm going to buy as many shorts as he'll ever need. And, awesome. You know, and so my mom and my dad, you know, my dad taught me to be tough. My dad taught me to be strong, you know, and just put in the work. My dad taught me, you know, how to put in the work day in and day out. And so my parents just built this incredible, you know, work ethic and mindset with me that's not only carried over to my family now, but has carried over to many aspects of my life.
Do you just continually change? You know, do you just evolve, turn into a different KC week by week?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I'm 35 now, which I know doesn't seem old, but I look back on when I was training for an Ironman and training for, you know, kind of my first round of Spartans. And, you know, 35 is older, you know, I hurt in a lot more places and my outlook and my mindset is completely different. And so as I keep going, I learn, I grow, my opinions change almost on a daily basis as I gather more information, as I change who I am and who I'm becoming. I think it's pretty silly to expect that we're going to be the same as we were, you know, 5 years ago, as we were pre-COVID, because our lives are not the same, and we have grown and changed. And if we aren't changing, then I think we're doing ourselves and the people around us a disservice, because our lives are all about growth, and we're going to fail. We're going to fail. We're going to crash and burn. We're going to make huge mistakes, but that's okay. That's part of life, because without those mistakes, we're not going to grow.
For sure. And share with us some of your final thoughts, and something that's been on your mind as you've thought about coming on this show and talking about this. What would you leave us with, Casey?
Well, especially with the, you know, title of this show being A Close Call with Death, so often, especially during the pandemic, we've all had to face our mortality in a little bit of a way. And I think a lot of people in our world have decided, instead of restarting their life, that they're kind of scared to go out and start exploring what their life is now. So many people are scared that they're going to fail, scared that they're going to make mistakes, scared that it's going to be plastered all over the internet. And you know, I can't alleviate any of those fears, but that's the whole point of this life. The whole point is to make mistakes. The whole point is to fail. I mean, the whole point of this life is to make mistakes, because without mistakes, we are not going to have any growth. Without mistakes, we're not going to be able to live. So yeah, go out, try to start, you know, start a new business. Have another kid. If you want to fail, yeah, have another kid. You'll find plenty of ways to fail. You know, try to, heck, I got a violin for Christmas and I've been failing at that. You know, so as our lives progress, if you want to progress, if you're stuck, if you're depressed, find a goal, find something that gets you up in the morning, find something that lights a fire within you, because this life isn't about sitting there and scrolling TikTok. This life is about being a success and making your way in the world.
I love that. And I can't think of another way to a better way, you know, to just kind of wrap this up. And I admire your perseverance and your determination to overcome challenges. You get out there in the world and you live it large. You're just an amazing man. You stood out in my mind the moment I saw you and your story. And I encourage everybody that listens to this, please go out and check out Casey's story and get his book and learn from his lessons, because that's what this podcast is all about, is all of us having an opportunity to learn from those who have had significant challenges and found a way to fight through and find the joy in this life. Everyone can do that, no matter what your challenges are. It may not be immediate relief. It may take a lifetime to overcome some of the challenges, but you can get there and you just don't give up. So thank you, my friend, so much for being on the show today and sharing your wonderful personality and your life. And I wish you well.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for taking the time of reflection and letting us share in your experience. Becoming a part of your journey, Casey, ultimately impacts ours. So until we see each other again, you take care of yourself and keep doing what you're doing, man, every single day.
Oh, thank you. You as well.
You bet. Take care.